United States v. Melissa Gallagher, 12-3270. Ms. Pollack.
Good morning. May it please the Court and Counsel, my name is Elizabeth Pollack. I'm with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois. I represent the appellant, Melissa Gallagher, in this case. Really, this is more of a factual question at this point, but it is a legal question. And the question is, what was the district court thinking in imposing the sentence of 12 months on a revocation of Ms. Gallagher's supervised release? It is true that there are some original legal issues here, but there seems to be no dispute between the parties as to whether or not the United States Supreme Court case of Tapia should apply to revocation proceedings. That was our argument, and it was conceded by the government. And then the second legal question is, what should the standard of review be? And both parties have advocated for a plain error standard of review in this case, since there was no objection made to the sentence at the time that it was imposed. So the question then progresses to what happened factually at the sentencing hearing, or in this case there were three separate hearings regarding this revocation petition. And it is Ms. Gallagher's contention that the district court's primary consideration in sentencing her to 12 months in the Bureau of Prisons was to impose a term of imprisonment that would allow her to facilitate her drug rehabilitation. And the government has...
Well, if she were to have done that, though, wouldn't a 24-month sentence have made a lot more sense? Because that's what you need to get into the program.
It's to get into one of the programs, specifically the RDAP program, which is a 500-hour program that the Bureau of Prisons runs.
Program.
It is, but there are other programs available, and that was actually the subject of discussion between Ms. Gallagher's attorney and the trial court, where he advocated that a sentence of even 6 months can get you drug rehab depending on the facility that you go into, and the court seemed to accept that fact, and it was a fact that was not contested by the government. So I believe that through those discussions, it became clear that the 24-month program was not necessary in order for her to obtain some level of drug treatment. So then the question becomes, what other considerations did the district court have in giving her this sentence? And, you know, it's true that Tapia was a case where a sentence was lengthened for the need for drug rehabilitation, and in this case, she was given a guideline sentence. So it wasn't improperly lengthened, but Tapia also says that a sentence cannot be imposed for the purpose of drug rehab. It doesn't necessarily need to be lengthened for drug rehabilitation, and if there is even a remote possibility that the purpose of the sentence, the underlying purpose, was to afford rehabilitative services, then that is an improper sentence under Tapia.
Remote possibility is enough?
That's what the Tapia in, let's see, it did say that in this case, and I'm looking at page 2392 of the opinion in Tapia, says the sentencing transcript suggests the possibility that Tapia's sentence was based on her rehabilitative needs, and that possibility was enough for them to reverse that on that basis. So, yes, the possibility, and that brings up an interesting point, which is the Kubesko case, and I have no idea if I'm saying that properly, but that was one of the cases that was presented by the government, and was cited by the government to say that, well, look, the district court here did have another consideration, which was the safety of the community. And that's a valid consideration under 3553. So there, you know, the district court did rely on something proper, so we can go ahead and use that to justify the sentence. But in the Kubesko case, the court actually reversed the sentence and saying that the record was ambiguous as to what the real reason was. And because we can't tell, I mean, when we're looking at the district court's actual imposition of sentence here, which is on page 22 of the sentencing transcript, there are six paragraphs, and that's all we know as to what why the district court elected that sentence. The only other thing we can look to is the context of the remaining hearings, all of which had to do with her failure to complete her drug rehabilitation.
And her continuing to use drugs.
That's true. So you've made my point there, Your Honor, which is that she has no control over her drug addiction. Now, she had tried and failed on multiple occasions to complete these programs.
But each one of those, each possession of drugs, is a violation of the supervised release.
Which she did not contest. She admitted those violations at the final hearing. She did not try to get out from underneath that. She had admitted that she had an addiction. She had admitted that she had violated. And she was, as so many addicts are, incapable of controlling her impulses on her own and required another form of rehab. So clearly the context says that
removal from the context in which she would get continual access to these.
I would agree with that. That's actually a very slippery slope. It's difficult to distinguish between which was the true purpose, but it seemed here that she failed every attempt at outpatient rehab, so this prison sentence was really an attempt to get her inpatient rehab, to get her off the street, to get her away from the influences.
Well, Ms. Pollack, let me ask you, let's think about it this way. Suppose the district court says this prison sentence will prevent you from doing X, and it will get you out of the habit of doing X.
Yes.
Is that prison sentence being imposed for punishment, for rehabilitation, or incapacitation, or all of the above?
It depends on what the judge says about it. I mean, I need a little bit more to go
off. That's all the judge has said.
Then that's an improper sentence. Because there have to be other considerations besides the need for rehabilitation. Punishment could have been mentioned. It wasn't. Deterrence could have been mentioned. It wasn't.
I'm going to order, let's see, if anything, prison will keep you away from the drugs and from your husband.
Yes.
Who seems to be a drug influence on you.
Keep her away from the drugs, meaning get her help with her drug addiction.
Or incapacitation.
I mean, it could be both.
It could be both. Yeah, that's correct. It could be both, but it's very difficult to tell from such a short transcript as to which one it was. There's no mention of any of the other 3553A factors for protecting
We remand this, and the judge says, you are now sentenced to 12 months to punish you for having repeatedly violated the supervisory release.
To prevent you from doing it again.
If that's the result, then that would be a proper sentence. My argument is not what's going to happen after this point. What I'm concerned about is that the sentence that was imposed was based on a factor that the district court was not permitted to consider. So if we go back and it's remanded, which is our request, and the district court says at that point, okay, now I'm punishing you for 12 months, well, then that would be a proper sentence. But this one is not.
You say 24 months.
She didn't say 24 months.
I say she go back. That might be the case. Huh?
I think that would be another appeal if that happened, Your Honor. But, yes, she could technically do that if she felt that for some reason 12 months was not sufficient punishment. But I don't think she would do that. I think the district court in this case was completely concerned with the fact that this person could not control her drug rehabilitation or control her drug addiction and was focused on getting her off the street and into rehabilitation since she couldn't do it on her own. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Mr. Schneider?
May it please the Court. At the final stage of these extended proceedings, there came a point when the district court had to select and then impose a sentence. And at that point, the government would submit the district court made two statements potentially touching upon questions of correction and of rehabilitation. Both the content and the context of those statements make clear that the district court was not explaining its rationale for choosing a sentence of imprisonment, but rather was making precisely the sorts of statements that the Supreme Court in Tapia has approved and that this court in Lucas has approved. And in fact, both of those statements occurred after the court addressed the 3553 factors, including the defendant's history and characteristics, as well as the need to protect the public, and after the district court indicated that it would impose this combined sentence of 1 year in prison combined with an additional 3 years of supervised release. The first statement that the court made after that point was her decision to order drug treatment for the defendant, which she was entitled to do during the period of supervised release, which was a part of the sentence, and that she was entitled to recommend during the period of incarceration. And then she says that I hope that you will get that sentence while you are in prison. And Lucas makes clear that it's appropriate for a district court to address a defendant on matters concerning rehabilitation in the context of sentencing, and that's particularly true here where the district court chose a sentence, notwithstanding the government and the probation officer's suggestion, that excluded the defendant from participating in the 24-month drug treatment program. And then the second statement the district court made was, in fact, in response to the defendant's own request that she be designated to a particular BOP hospital in Missouri or, alternatively, to a facility with a drug treatment program. And in weighing those two alternatives, the district court said that the highest priority here should be drug treatment, and she in fact granted the request of the defendant for that facility designation, which again she was permitted to do. And when one looks at the course of these three hearings, there is a lot of discussion, obviously, about drug addiction and drug treatment, which is inescapable given the nature of the violations here, repeated drug tests, as well as the defendant's failure to comply with one of the conditions, which is that she participate in drug aftercare treatment. And those hearings concern the supervision of the defendant's supervised release term, as well as in the second hearing, the district court's decision to modify those conditions to include community confinement. And in fact, in modifying a term of supervised release, the district court is required to consider the 3553 factor touching upon treatment options here. And so we would submit that this is a case not only in which there's nothing in the record to suggest that the court had an improper motive and viewed rehabilitation as an object of the imprisonment aspect of the sentence that she imposed, but in fact she imposed a sentence that, notwithstanding the recommendations of the government, particularly excluded the defendant from eligibility for the program that at least the government and the probation officer thought was appropriate here. And so unless the court has other questions, we would ask that the court affirm the judgment in the sentence.
I guess I have one, which is I'm looking at 3582A, which tells us the court must recognize that imprisonment is not an appropriate means of promoting correction and rehabilitation. At least in Illinois and Indiana, and I think Wisconsin as well, the state departments are all called departments of correction. They all run prisons, presumably to promote correction and rehabilitation. 3582A, that phrase sounds like a surrender and seems to put district judges in a very difficult spot when combined with 3553A, where they have to consider rehabilitation and correctional treatment.
I think that's right, Your Honor. And, you know, it's in what we're dealing with here is the context of a supervised release consideration, which is this transition from a period of incarceration, which the court has said is not something that is rehabilitative in nature, and from being at liberty in the community. And it's in that middle zone where the rehabilitative purpose, at least in the federal sentence system that we have now, is most squarely at issue, and that's precisely what the discussion of the district court here most directly concerned.
Mr. Snyder, your office is, I hope, not in the practice of encouraging district judges to violate 3582A or TAPIA, is it?
We are not, Your Honor, and we recognize that there was a mistake here made.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Pollack. 3 minutes if you need it. And by the way, we recognize the motion to expedite the appeal that has been filed and that your client's sentence expires in September, so we'll try to endeavor to bump this up in the queue to get to it.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Just briefly, the court at sentencing did say the words 3553A factors. There is no disputing that. She also said that the history and characteristics of the defendant are the most significant ones to look at here, immediately followed by, you have a very, very serious drug addiction. The only portion of her history and characteristics that were ever presented in evidence were related to her drug addiction. So when she says the most important factors to her are the history and characteristics, the only evidence presented is the history of her drug addiction, then it's pretty clear that the court is thinking about that.
That history is a history of violations, repeated violations of
misconduct. Correct.
They're all the same.
Based on her addictive personality.
Opposite sides of the same coin.
Well, I think that you off that line with addiction a lot. But yes, they lots of violations because of her drug addiction. And there is one sentence where she said that there is a risk to the community because her, I guess Ms. Gallagher's husband was also a drug addict and they had a child at home. And so we need to get this situation under control for that child is what was said. There were no other mention of any of the other factors. No deterrence, no risk to the general community, no reasonable but not greater than necessary to effectuate the purposes of sentencing. There were sufficient but not greater than necessary. There were no other discussions at all of the other 3553A factors. So at best, There is
some specific deterrence discussion.
To her. She didn't say the words, but I think it's pretty clear that when you put somebody in jail that they're going to potentially be deterred from the same conduct that put them there, hopefully. But no, that was not actually discussed in the record. But I think it could be inferred. At the best, what we've got here is an ambiguous situation where there was a discussion of potential danger to the defendant's child because of her addiction, and then the other side of that is that she had just had drug addiction and needed to get that under control. And the court had told her that repeatedly, get under control, get under control. You know, you're risking yourself, you're risking your child. So we have those two issues, and that's it. And when there is a question as to which of those two issues was the primary issue in determining the sentence, we cannot tell from this record whether or not what the actual reason was. And that violates Tapia. And so on that basis, we would ask this court to remand the case for resentencing. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.